And welcome back to WDOT Port Washington. This is Sports in the Morning. I'm Zach alongside Gavin. And today we have a very special guest, Matt Levine. Matt's a Schreiber alum who recently graduated from Maryland and is now currently the play-by-play broadcaster for the Binghamton Rumble Ponies and the Stony Brook women's basketball team. Matt, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you guys for having me. It's always good to come back and chat with some Schreiber guys. So always happy.
And here's to a quick PSA. Texting and driving is dangerous. That's a fact. More than 9 in 10 Americans believe sending 94% and reading 91% texts while driving is dangerous. There have been many efforts to educate drivers and convey the potential consequences of texting and driving using scare tactics or preachy messages. And while research shows that people are convinced that the behavior is dangerous, they are still doing it. In order to address this disconnect between awareness and behavior, the campaign goes beyond showing people the potential crashes and gruesome end results of distracted driving and addresses the fact that individuals are personally engaging in a behavior they know is dangerous. This campaign targets drivers ages 16 to 34 and reinforces the idea that even though people feel impervious to the dangers of texting and driving, they aren't. Nobody is special enough to text and drive.
And here's a quick promo. Come on down next Wednesday and Thursday to the varsity bowling tryouts if you would like to. So now we'll start the interview with Matt. So we'll start way back when you were in our shoes here at Schreiber. And what sports did you call and what was your favorite to call?
So that's really where I started kind of doing play-by-play for the first time. It was always a dream, like a little kid's dream, and I think it still is, honestly. You never really feel like it's a real job, but Mr. Claff and that whole radio station and everybody there had some friends that did it that were a little bit older than me, so they kind of opened the door. But I played a sport in the fall. I was on the volleyball team, and then I played a sport in the spring. I was on the baseball team, so that really opened up the winter for me. And I had played basketball in middle school, and then I didn't make the high school team, which kind of ended up being the start of the play-by-play career. So I got to do, I think my sophomore year, I started calling the boys and girls basketball games from the top of the bleachers at Schreiber into the MP3 recorder, just kind of like a little headset. It was, I could still picture exactly what it looks like. And then we'd upload it the next day with Claff onto the portradio.org. But towards the end of my high school career, it kind of got more serious. So my senior year, the boys basketball team needed somebody to film their games on the road. And so me and my buddy Dylan Spilko, who also studied journalism at Maryland, funny enough, but we decided that we could make it work where we called the games together and also filmed. And we got paid to film by the school district. So we got paid to film the games and got to take the bus with the team. It was pretty cool. That was kind of my first experience traveling with any kind of team. So obviously it's different, you know, you're in high school and those are your buddies that are also on the basketball team, but just to be able to do those games kind of set the foundation for me to go to college and continue it. So, I mean, I always tell Claff this, but forever indebted to everything and the opportunities that you have at the high school level, because it's not like that in most high schools around the country.
I know there's, so now there's a class here, obviously, that you visited on Friday. Was there a class when you were a student here, or did you have to reach out to Claff to start broadcasting?
So there wasn't a sports broadcasting class. There was Radio 1 and Radio 2.
Yeah, that's what me and Gavin are in now.
Yeah, so you guys know what it is. But in Radio 2, that's when we had a couple of weeks, really, where we would just kind of sit there and pull up a game and pretend to call it. And I think you can do all that. Obviously, that's so helpful, but for me, like when I make tapes of games that I'm not actually at or I'm not actually doing, like I struggle to actually get into the mindset of, all right, I'm doing a game here. Like now when I sit in the top of the bleachers, or I'm at an actual game that I'm doing, that I'm prepared for. You know, it's almost like practice for game reps. Like, you can't beat the game reps. So, I mean, that stuff is all helpful, and it really takes you to another level. But to be able to actually do the games in high school was special.
I'm going to be honest. We set up a Zoom almost every Thursday night football and broadcast the games ourselves.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, you got to do it. It's, and you'll notice, like, when you get to, if you were actually at the game, you'd have so much more emotion and invested in it. It would be a million times better. But you got to start off with that kind of stuff. I mean, I did that with, you know, playing NBA 2K. I'm yelling at the TV of what's going on, or going back and muting Mets games as a kid. And, you know, it's fun. It's like, it's our own little passion that you can really make a lot of things happen with.
And you're just a couple years younger than Jake Eisenberg. Did he help you at all when you went to Maryland?
Oh, yeah. Jake is he's one of the greatest people that I've had so far. Not only helping me with things, but also just being a good guy and a good friend. So we actually go back to, oh, gosh, I guess I was not even a Triber yet. Our parents were pretty friendly when I was growing up. So I knew Jake going into Schreiber and everything like that. I knew that he was already at Maryland. And I guess once I got to high school, that's when it became like, all right, this is what I want to do. So I started talking to him about it then. And then for me, like during my college search was when our relationship really picked up because I had applied early decision to Newhouse. I wanted to go to Syracuse. Grew up a Syracuse fan, visited there, loved it, whatever. Didn't end up getting in. So I was between Maryland, Miami, Temple, all these. To me, it was random at the time because I didn't know anything other than Syracuse. I really put all my eggs in one basket. But that's when Jake really helped. Showed me kind of what it was like at Maryland. Didn't get into Miami, so that kind of made the decision pretty easy. Ended up going to Maryland, and you know, if it wasn't, a lot of this industry is who you know and how they can help you in the nicest way. That's the complete honest answer. So being able to be at school with older friends and older classmates that knew him personally, and he had such a good reputation everywhere he's been. So just to be able to say, like, hey, I grew up with this kid. I know Jake, you know, and he, I assume, would help me at any point if anybody reached out. But just to be able to know him, that kind of gave me, I felt, like a little bit of a leg up that I was getting some more opportunities because I had that connection. I had that relationship with him. And then that led me to working with the Maryland Baseball Network all 4 years of college, which he created when he was a student. So it kind of, you know, the legacy kind of continued, passed the baton down. And when I was in that position of being the director of broadcasting and media for it as a senior or as a junior and senior, I mean, I was reaching out all the time about how to do things. And, you know, just, I mean, he created this thing. It's his baby, and he still tunes in, he still listens. And then I got the same treatment after when I left. I was like, oh, I still need to tune in and see what these guys are up to. And then just to finish a long answer, now that I'm in minor league baseball, and obviously Jake has went through the minor leagues very quickly, and now he's at the major league level, but he was in so many leagues in the minors, and the first league I'm in is the Eastern League with Binghamton. Jake was in the Eastern League when he was with the Richmond Flying Squirrels. And there's a lot of broadcasters that are still in the league today that were there a few years ago when he was. So that's, I mean, at this level now that I'm in the professional setting, just to be able to know somebody who climbed the way through so quickly and knows all these other broadcasters around the league and now is in the major leagues. Like, even if he's not helping me every single day, which he does because he's the best, but just to be able to see that path of, all right, this guy's not even 30 yet, and it's possible to get to the big leagues. Like, he's tremendous, just such a good person, and definitely gives us a lot of hope looking up to him.
So going back to when you were calling these games at Maryland, how different was calling those games to the games that you called here?
Honestly, night and day. Being able to call Big Ten sporting events was, at the time, like, I had chills almost every game that I did. Like, you sit there and you're, like, just so thankful and grateful for the opportunities. I mean, I got to call some really, really, really cool events throughout my time at college. Freshman year, started off with some field hockey, volleyball, soccer, all that stuff. Did like five baseball games as a freshman, not many. And just showing up, filling in, you know, when people couldn't do games, and I would be the first one to say, all right, I want to do it, all that. But you don't realize how much prep goes into doing a play-by-play broadcast for any sport. I mean, that's where the high school and college levels are different, where in high school I was showing up to the gym with both teams' rosters, and that's it. And, you know a team's record, but you don't know any storylines about each kid unless they're your best friend that's playing for Shriver. But when we would play Hicksville or East Meadow, like, there's just no possible way to find other information about teams. So that's where it's different in college. Every Division I athletics department will have a media relations communication staff that compiles all this information, and it's accessible to anybody. There's game notes. There's just endless information, especially at Maryland. I mean, tremendous media relations staff that made our lives so much better and so much easier. But I think the way that student radio was viewed there, it's, you know, you get access to everything, which was incredible. And such a young age, being a freshman and getting to go to the men's basketball or football or whatever, going to the weekly press conferences, and, you know, you're learning just so much about how to be in that setting and be professional. And I think that helped me grow a lot quicker, just being thrown into it, kind of. But when it's all said and done and I look back, I saved my credentials, my media credentials, from pretty much every game I did in college. I think I graduated with 150 games under my belt in 4 years, plus a semester of COVID where we were at home, and then a year of no fans in the stands where I was still able to do games, which is pretty cool. But I've done the Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium. So I called a game at Yankee Stadium. I called a game at the Barclays Center. I called a game at the Gainbridge Fieldhouse where the Pacers play in Indiana. The men's basketball Big Ten tournament was there. I did two regionals for baseball, one that College Park hosted, which was the first in program history, a couple of men's basketball NCAA tournaments, women's basketball NCAA tournaments. You got to travel with the baseball team. I mean, you can't beat that. Baylor, Dallas Baptist, Rutgers, other Big Ten schools. And a regular season game was one of the coolest, but I got to call a homecoming football game at Ohio State at the Shoe against Maryland. So just the opportunities that were there, like, and the prep that goes into it. And I look back at even what players were in those games. The game against Ohio State for football, it was C.J. Stroud, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jeremy Ruckert on the offensive side. And that stuff will, in 10 years, is going to mean so much, even more than it does now. So it's very different. I think it just gets better at every level you go. And just the accessibility and what's available to you of how can you prepare and how can you be the most prepared person when you do those games.
Matt, does the Big Ten atmosphere, like, contribute to your excitement while you're broadcasting the game? And in the year where there was no fans, how was it different?
Oh, no doubt. I ride off the crowd a lot. whether that's internal energy or actually executing that on the air, letting the crowd take over. It was hard. There were cardboard cutouts at all of these games, and it was just and at the time there was a mask mandate on campus, so we were talking through that. Like, you get out of breath quickly with that. You can't really hear. Your voice is kind of muffled through the microphone. But just the atmospheres of men's basketball at Maryland, we got lucky. When my 4 years, they were really good, top 25. They were ranked number 3 at one point my sophomore year, and that was the year that the tournament didn't happen and at that March. So who knows what would have happened there. They won the regular season title in the Big Ten. I mean, that was a tremendous year. But the way that the basketball arena is built there, it's the students are just on top of you. It's on the court. It's incredible how loud it gets in there, to the point where there's been times I couldn't hear myself or my broadcast partner at all with our headphone volume turned all the way up. And that kind of just... It makes it hard to do a game, but it's so cool. And that's what I'm saying. Like, being in the atmosphere, is there's nothing better than doing a game like that. And then you go to do the games that have no one there. And it's honestly tough at first. You got to get used to it, but you got to find somewhere within yourself to bring that energy out. Because it's all about energy and emotion at the end of the day, and how you're going to make the listener or viewer feel in that moment. So trying to lock in and do a good job of that was a lot tougher when there's nobody there. And then just for baseball for a moment, when I did the College Park Regional, we had just won our first Big Ten championship of the regular season. We went to Omaha to do the Big Ten tournament. We lost. We were the 1 seed. Indiana was the 8 seed. They beat us, so we got eliminated. Fly back to Maryland. On the flight back, we found out we were hosting a regional, which was what a tremendous atmosphere. And to think about how Maryland baseball has come this far. When Jake was there, they went to 2 super regionals. And then now back-to-back regionals. And now the coaching staff has changed a little bit, but that's another story. Just to be able to do those Tuesday midweek games in February and then do the games throughout the season all 4 years, where you're getting a couple hundred people to then, all right, we're hosting a regional. This is going to be sold out. Plus they brought in portable bleachers for the outfield, which at Maryland, the baseball stadium is relatively small at the moment. They're renovating it, but there's no seats in the outfield. But they brought in, it had to be like 1,000 more seats. It was just insane. And they had 5,000 people there every game of this regional. And it went all the way to the last game against UConn on a Monday night. I mean, what an incredible weekend that was. That was the first time I really called baseball games in that kind of atmosphere. And I think that set me up well for the professional level of just being locked in for every pitch and riding off the crowd. And you can't beat it. It's just such raw emotion that you get when you have a crowd like that.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually at that regional at Maryland.
Really?
Yeah. My grandpa took me. So we made the long drive up, and yeah, it was pretty fun. So now moving on to your professional jobs. How did you get that first job straight out of college, and did you have to reach out to anybody, or did they come get you?
Are you talking about with the Rumble Ponies?
Yeah.
So it was interesting for me. I wanted to go into pro ball the first summer after graduation. Now, it's different after 2020. Minor league baseball no longer has short season teams and short season levels. So, like, the Brooklyn Cyclones used to be a short-season team. Now they're full-season. So they start in the first week of April. Every team does now. There's 120 minor league teams. They all start the first week of April. So that was kind of tough for me being in college still from when the season started to the end of May, really. And I had interviewed with teams at the minor league level my senior year of college. Nothing panned out just because I was still a student. And no team, and that's okay, I understood that. No team wanted somebody who was going to come in May. So then I was looking at other leagues, MLB Draft League, potentially going back to the Cape Cod League. And those positions that were being thrown around were, I was told I would not be able to finish the season with Maryland baseball as a senior if they did make the postseason. So this is like November before the year even started, before the baseball season even started. And I had to just take a risk and say, all right, Maryland baseball's making the postseason. It's going to be a good year, and I'm going to stick with it and see what happens, because I didn't want to leave. I wanted to do those games. I wanted to finish out the college experience, and I got lucky. That's when they hosted the regional. So bet on yourself. That's a good piece of advice. But anyway, fast forward, graduation, go to host the regional. Season ends there. I came home for I came home back to Port Washington, and I had just reached out, like, where can I do games in the winter, in the fall, in the winter? So I reached out to a bunch of people, but more specifically, Jason Yellen. He's the head of the media relations department at Maryland. And I had a very good relationship with him. He's from Long Island. He went to Stony Brook. And that kind of opened things up of, all right, here's a contact at Stony Brook. Here's a contact at Long Island University. And here's a contact at St. John's. And I had reached out to all of them. And within a few days, I had been able to do some games at each of those schools. So I started doing some volleyball and men's and women's soccer and field hockey. And eventually at Stony Brook, they had some changes with their SIDs, which is a sports information director. Those are all the people that deal with the media relations at the college level. So they had some openings there, and I had no pro ball offers yet or anything like that. It was still pretty early. So I took it, and I was doing games there, but also I was an SID for the men's basketball team at Stony Brook as a 22-year-old kid right out of college. It was pretty cool. Yeah, 22 at the time. So I got a lot of experience there with the media relations, which at the minor league baseball level, you're doing a lot of as well. So that helped me a ton. But when it came time, it was like October, November, closer to Thanksgiving, really, like this time of year, I started reaching out to literally every minor league team that I could possibly think of, which was a lot. I made a spreadsheet of who their broadcasters were and who was potentially moving on or leaving the job or just what jobs might be open, because a lot of this of getting your foot in the door is you reaching out to people and finding ways to get involved. Not so much the jobs, like I didn't really see that many jobs get posted online, whether that was on Teamwork Online or, you know, some will post them on their team's Twitter or Instagram or whatever. But it, for me, it was just, I'm going to email a half inning that I did. So I found whatever I thought my best half inning was of play by play and my resume. And here's who I am and what I want to do. And I sent that to 50, 60 teams or so. You don't hear back from almost every single one. You don't hear back from almost any, really. I probably heard back from 10. I think I had 3 or 4 interviews. And some of the ones you hear back from even say, like, oh, you know, position's filled, or, you know, we're not looking for anybody, things like that. So I think that's the toughest part of going through all of it, is not to get discouraged, because like, I knew what I was capable of and I knew my experience level, and I just needed one person or one team to give me a shot. And it ended up being the best possible position for me, I think, now that the first year is done. But I had interviewed with a couple of teams, and I still had not heard from Binghamton yet. And then after those interviews, found out they were going in a different direction. So before I even heard from Binghamton, I was down to basically nothing. Going through all this process, and it's a months-long thing. It's now February. It's after the new year. And I finally hear back from Binghamton and the broadcaster there, who was just my broadcast partner this year. And he reached out. They go through their process pretty late. So we hopped on a phone call, or maybe I think we hopped on a Zoom, hit it off. I mean, it was just right away. I could tell, like, this is the guy that I want to be with. And maybe 5 days later, later that week, he called me and offered me the job. And I obviously took it, no question. I didn't have a place to live, nothing. Like, I had to figure all that out. But that was a later issue. And I got up there the end of March, and our opening day was April 6th. So it all kind of happened pretty late and pretty fast. And we went from April 6th to September 27th, all the way to the Eastern League Championship Series. So, I mean, what a first year it was. And my partner there who hired me for the job is going to be my best friend, one of my best friends, not only in the industry, but in life itself, literally forever. So I got super lucky. Mets organization is incredible. And it's at the end of the day, it's all about just fighting and going after it and trying to get every opportunity you can.
And now that you're done with your first year, what would be the day in the life look like for a AA commentator?
Yeah, so that's a good question. It's very routine based, but throughout each day, you're going to get things that pop up that throw your routine off. So for me, like, I was so locked into the schedule and the routine of like, baseball is such a routine based sport. It's the same thing every day, really, until the game starts and the game is different. But you just, it's just being able to adjust to when those things do happen that kind of throw you off your routine. You got to just get right back on track. But you wake up, it's not like a normal 9 to 5. It's really cool. I would wake up, have some breakfast. I had a nice house up there in Binghamton. I lived with our athletic trainer. So it was awesome to kind of be on the same schedule as somebody else. And for a night game, we played a lot of our night games at 6:30, some at 6:05, some at 6:35, whatever, 7 o'clock sometimes. But you get to the park around noon. So think about that. You got the whole morning. Sometimes play golf in the morning, you know.
Yep.
Enjoy yourself. That's another thing. It's such a long season. You got to be able to enjoy your life. But get there at noon. Immediately start working. For me, this is what I did as the assistant broadcaster. I would work on the game notes for that night's game, which I did a copy of the game notes for every game that entire season. So that's where working at Stony Brook helped me tremendously, because I did the Stony Brook men's basketball game notes, you know, a few months before this. So had that experience, worked on the game notes, tells you who the starting pitchers are that day, everything, storylines, notes, whatever's trends, hitting streaks, all that can help a broadcast at any point. It's all there. So that's pretty cool. Every team does it. So that's a lot of how you prep on the other team too. Especially if you're seeing them for the first time, you know, it's just a lot of reading and retaining information. But for me, writing these for my team, like, that helped me prep right there for that night's game. Like, I know exactly what I put in the game notes. So that was tremendous. But those took me, I don't know, roughly, I would say 2 hours or less every time, especially towards the end of the year. I was flying through them just because I was so used to it. And then it's a lot of pro ball is just having access. I got to go into the clubhouse. I got to go into the coach's office and the manager's office and be down on the field for batting practice. And, you know, they're taking infield, outfield, or the pitchers are throwing their bullpen sessions on the side. To me, like, there's nothing that beats being down on the field and talking to players, coaches, and the manager, and picking their brain on what they're trying to do, or just anything that's going on and their thoughts on stuff. That makes the broadcast a million times better, in my opinion, than just reading the game notes, because you get a raw opinion and an actual conversation with somebody, and you build those relationships. They're going to trust you. They're going to talk to you after that, and that's the beauty of I've been able to be at so many different levels of baseball, college summer league, and now pro ball. It's in pro ball. It's just so much more relaxed than I thought it would be. But yeah, I mean, once the game notes are done, I'm talking to guys throughout the whole day. And then this would be for a home game. Jacob, my partner, and I, we record a on-camera thing for pregame for the video board in the stadium. And just kind of, like, you go to any game, the broadcasters give you a preview of what's going on that night. So we do that, prep some more, write in my scorebook. I had to put the lineups in and everything like that. And I was tasked with a little bit of social media help, so I'd post the lineup on our team's social media accounts before the game. Obviously, you're mixing in some meals when you can. That's always hard. But you got to get the lunch in, got to get some dinner in at some point. And yeah, and then the games would start, and we'd have a 10-minute pregame show or a 15-minute pregame show, interview with a coach, manager, or player. Usually it would be about 5 minutes. And then, like, the other stuff that goes into it is before the game is, you know, making sure both clubhouses, both staffs have copies of both teams' rosters. They have, and especially if a roster changes, we're sending that out to the media, local and national media. We find out from the Mets, and then we make the roster transaction official. Then both clubhouses have to get a copy of it. Obviously, the press box has to get a copy of it. So you're doing that. You're making a stat pack, which has all these numbers possible that you could think of, giving that to both coaching staffs. So there's a lot of, like, intangible stuff that goes into it too, which doesn't consume much time. But yeah, it's very routine. A lot of the same things go down every day, but then certain things pop up where you have to kind of get off track for a couple minutes. But I think the biggest thing is just getting right back on into your routine, and things work out the way they should. So it was a great first year for sure.
Okay, so now I don't know if you listened into our interview with Jake Eisenberg, but at the end we did like these short, like one answer quick questions. So I'll do that again here. So, perfect. Who would be in your dream booth?
With other play-by-play,
yeah,
or an analyst?
Any. Play-by-play or analysis.
How many do I get to pick?
Three.
Oh, boy. All right. This is tough. Wow. Baseball. Oof. Gary Cohen. Howie Rose, obviously. And you know what? Give me Keith Hernandez. I think he's tremendous. And
yeah.
And so the whole, just the Mets as a whole, like, I grew up with them. That's it. It's all of them. But other, I'll give you some other than the Mets play-by-play wise. I think Joe Davis is really good at television. I think Brian Anderson is tremendous, especially with the playoffs. He was so much fun to watch. But yeah, there's so many good ones, but yeah, I mean, it would be surreal. Like, I know Jake's called games with Howie Rose, and I know the whole feeling that he talks about with that. It's just so cool.
What's your favorite stadium you've called a game from?
Favorite stadium I've called a game from? Baseball. Oof. Give me Duncan Park, where the Hartford Yard Goats play, the AA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies. Basketball, Barclays Center. That was cool. I did a Maryland versus Florida game, the Basketball Hall of Fame classic that they had there. And then football, not going to say Yankee Stadium just because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Ohio State, the horseshoe was incredible.
What is your favorite ballpark food?
Not a big ballpark food guy. that's what I was saying before. You got to find ways to eat. That's the biggest thing. Like for me, I needed to eat healthy. I needed to eat normal every day. Cause how many days in a row can I eat a hot dog or chicken tenders, you know? But if I'm going to a game as a fan, like I'm going for the chicken tenders and fries every time.
And then one final question. Do you have any advice for me and Gavin?
Absolutely. I think you guys, you know, like I said, you got to seek out opportunities. If you want to pursue this for real, it's all about getting opportunities and getting reps and going to college. And, you know, even if you're at a school where it's a smaller radio station, you can make it your own. That's a good thing. So just be proactive about finding people to get you in position to make to get opportunities, make those opportunities for yourself, and then send your stuff to people you trust. Let people listen to your stuff. Take criticism with a grain of salt. It's not really criticism. It's more advice, honestly, the way I look at it. Like if I value someone's opinion, they're going to tell me to work on something and I'm going to try it. And if I like it, yeah, I'm going to keep it. But just be proactive with all that stuff. And you just want to keep on plugging away at getting opportunities, always be available, and be a good person. That's the biggest thing. If you're a good person, people are going to reach out to you eventually. They're going to want to give the opportunities to you. And I think that goes without saying in life with anything, but it's happened to me at times people would be sick and they couldn't do a game in college for whatever reason. And instead of the station directors asking in a large group chat, they'd ask me directly because they knew I was always available, and they ended up just wanting to give me the opportunities. And so it all works out that way. But once you get to like the level where I am now, my first year of Pro Bowl, my friend gave me this piece of advice. It's stay humble, but know you belong and act like you belong. You want to have a mix of both. You don't want to be too humble to the point where you don't think you belong. And you also don't want to be thinking that you belong in the major leagues when you're not even, you know what I'm saying.
But yeah.
Just to have the balance of staying humble and knowing you belong somewhere can take you a long way, because it was my first year in Pro Bowl. I'm working with my partner who is 35 years old. There's a 12-year age gap, and he's been in Pro Bowl for several years. There's other broadcasters around the league that are in their 60s that are 30, 40 years into minor league baseball. So you're obviously with veterans and people that have done this for years. So that's where the staying humble comes in. But you want to also know that this is where you belong. You don't want to ever show somebody, oh, I don't think I belong here. You know, it just gives them the wrong impression, I think. So, working with a coaching staff of former major league players, and then working with players that are top Mets prospects and top prospects in baseball, I think just having the confidence, I can do this on an everyday basis. I can build these relationships. I know how to have a conversation with these people and actually make an impact. It goes so far in your career, and it'll help. Just having the confidence to do what you do on an everyday basis. But yeah, I mean, that's a long answer, a lot of advice mixed it within that. But I think it all just stems down to being motivated to get the opportunities. And when you do get them, just execute and do a good job and be a good person.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. And just good luck with everything you're doing. And yeah.
Zach, Gavin, I appreciate the time. You guys know how to reach out to me. If you ever need anything, please do. And yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad I could have come on.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
And wow, what an interview there. The Matt Levine interview. We're not going to play the intro today because we have to go. Go, go, go. We have money picks for you. We have game picks for you. Zach, Who's your lock this week?
So my lock this week is a very unfortunate lock, and it is going to be the Dallas Cowboys over the New York Football Giants. And, you know, I hate to say this, man. The Giants
are
the worst team
They're
in the
horrible.
NFL.
They're not good. And, you know, my lock, you know, there's not really many locks. But Bills Broncos seems like the best lock to me. Monday Night Football at home, that's a lock. My upset is my Giants over the Cowboys, even though I didn't even pick them in my game picks. That's my upset this week.
You have to take them
no,
in
you
the
don't.
Game picks.
No, you
All
don't.
Right, then I'm never. Then why do I always take my upsets to win in my game picks? I would never do that.
Yeah, be quiet.
Okay, now to my upset. I'm going to take the red-hot C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans
over the horrible
pick.
The Bengals are literally the best team in the NFL right now.
Yeah, but, you know, C.J. Stroud, he's just looked amazing so far. And my game of the week is going to be the 49ers versus the Jaguars. I just think that's a good game. The Jaguars have won 5 straight. The 49ers have not looked great over their last 3 games. So, yeah, that's my game of the week.
My game of the week is Lions versus Chargers, and I know the Chargers are 4-4 and 500 right now, but, you know, they'll make any game close, and especially against the Lions at home, they could win this game on like on a 4-25.
I thought you were
going
to choose the Browns versus the Ravens.
No, I can't choose that game because the AFC North games, they're always boring. They're really boring, but they get good at the end, and that's what I like about them. And going into our game picks, we have Thursday Night Football, Carolina Panthers at Chicago Bears. Zach, who do you see in this game?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Panthers. You know, I think that the Bears are not going to win with Bagent this week. I think Bryce Young, the number one overall pick, who's looked terrible this year, is going to have a good game. So that's why I'm going to take the Panthers.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bears here because they're at home on a night game. Panthers have to travel early. They don't get much practice. I've got the Bears because Bagent didn't even look horrible in that first half. All we need, then he threw his interceptions in the second half. All we need is first half Bagent, and the Bears win this game. Next, in Germany, we have the Colts going up against the Patriots, and I'm taking the Patriots in this game. This is apparently a bunch of people are saying that Bill Belichick, if he loses this game, he could get fired. So that's why I'm taking the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you here. I'm going to take the Patriots. And on to the next game, Texans versus the Bengals, which is my upset, so obviously I'm sticking with the Texans.
Yeah, I'm taking the Bengals. They're the hottest team in football right now, and they look good, but Joe Burrow and all of his receivers. Next up, Packers versus Steelers. Steelers a playoff team, and Zach, you have the Steelers in this game.
Yes, I absolutely do. The Packers are just 3-5. The Steelers are 5-3.
Again, how Steelers would it be if they won their last game on Thursday Night Football, but then lost to the Packers at home? That just makes the most sense for the Steelers.
It does.
You know that this rivalry, and that's just what's going to happen every time. Packers are winning this game. Next up, Titans versus Buccaneers. I'm taking the Buccaneers in this one. Baker Mayfield and his squad put up 37 points and still lost versus the Houston Texans. I think their defense could hold the Titans and Will Levis enough with Will Levis getting the start over Ryan Tannehill. So I'm taking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Baker Mayfield looked great, and the Bucs defense didn't look amazing, but I think they'll bounce back right here in this game. So I'm taking the Bucs. And on to the next game, we got the Browns versus the Ravens. The Ravens, what I think is the second-best team in the NFL right now.
I think the best.
Or the best, yeah. So I don't see this being a close game.
It's
going to
be close. It is divisional. It's a divisional game.
True.
It will be close.
It is at home, though, for the Ravens.
It is at home. So if it was at home for the Browns, I would honestly pick the Browns. But it's at home for the Ravens, yeah. So I'm going to take the Ravens in this game. Moving on to your game of the week, 49ers versus Jaguars. And we're actually both going to agree with the 49ers here, with the Jaguars on a hot streak coming off the bye. Why do you not pick the Jaguars in this game?
Because I think that streak comes to an end with this 49ers defense. Chase Young is coming into this game. I think he's going to have a great game. And I'm predicting a 10-sack game from this Niners team.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to go with the 49ers as well. The defense is good. Next game It's Saints versus Vikings. I'm going with the Saints because I think Dobbs is going to be a little overhyped going into this one. The Saints coming off a good win. So 5-4 Saints, I have them beating the 5-4 Vikings.
Josh Dobbs. Loved what I saw. Love what I'm going to see again this week. I think he's going to bring out that same fire, that same energy, and they're going to take down the Saints. And on to the next game, Falcons at the Cardinals.
Kyler
is back from that ACL tear last year. But I don't care. I got the Falcons.
Yeah, the Falcons don't use any of their good players, so I'm taking...
Taylor Heineke's having a day.
I'm taking Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Moving into our next game, my game of the week, Lions versus Chargers, and I'm having the upset pick of the Chargers winning this game and Justin Herbert. They're coming off a good game against the Jets. That's why...
Why didn't you put that as your upset?
Because I needed the Giants. Team's playing great. I got the Chargers.
Okay. I'm going to take the Lions. I think that they're 6-2. I love what I see every week in and week out from the Lions. And yeah, I got to take the Lions. And on to the next game, Giants versus the Cowboys. My lock and Gavin's upset. I got the Cowboys.
I'm still taking the Cowboys in this game. Now we're on picks. I really think that the Cowboys are going to win, but I always have to support my Giants in the upset pick. Next, Commanders versus Seahawks. Seahawks coming off a horrible game against the Ravens. And the Commanders coming off a win against the Patriots. But I'm still taking the Seahawks here. Hopefully Geno could turn it around.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the Commanders traded away Sweat. They traded away Young. They're getting no pass rush. I got the Hawks. Now the Jets versus the Raiders. The Jets are just terrible. And the Raiders love what they're doing with their new head coach. And sitting Jimmy G. So with that, I got the Raiders.
Yeah, I got the Raiders as well. They played great against the Giants. Antonio Pierce looks solid as their new head coach. They look like they have life. The Jets coming off a game against the Chargers, in which they played horribly on offense, which is why I think that this Raiders offense is really good. So I have the Raiders over the Jets on Sunday Night Football. Moving on to my lock, Broncos versus Bills. You know who I have in this game. It's the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you 100% on this. And that's going to do it for today's podcast. I'm Zach.
And I'm Gavin.
And this is WDOT Port Washington Sports in the Morning. And we'll see you guys on the next one.